Well, we are talking about the economy, and we have a break coming on right now. We'll have you on the next hour, maybe a little more, to talk about your book, Web of Debt. Again, thanks for coming on. We have a break. Do you want to bring the audience up to par with your bio?
My current book is Web of Debt. The website is webofdebt.com. It's basically about the Federal Reserve and the fact that all of our money is issued privately by banks. Our money system is a hoax. I actually have 11 books. The other 10 are largely about health and the politics of health, and I'm a lawyer by profession.
Okay, so you're very knowledgeable, and we have lots of things that we can talk about then. When we come back, let's talk about what issues of the day you think we need to be looking at. As I said a couple minutes ago, some people that I meet very confident the economy is going to bounce back because of the jumps in being made at Wall Street. And so they're looking at that to affect Main Street, and they're not criticizing the people that I've seen, that I've talked to in the streets of Portland, Oregon, very concerned with the bank bailouts. A lot of them think everything's going to be okay. So I want to get your take on the bank bailouts, if you think this is going to continue, or how long this can continue when we come back. And for those that want to talk to Ellen, the number is 866-841-1065. Stay with me, everybody.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I'm hearing of seeing this supposed swine flu outbreak. We're seeing multiple states talking about invoking the 10th Amendment. And I have a link right now at alexhansery.com, which is updated. The news is updated in each category at alexhansery.com. Click on the article about, I believe it's entitled, 75 towns or areas proposing local currencies. They're already starting to print their own money. So, Ellen, where would you like to begin today in the discussion of the Federal Reserve and our current economic model?
I think states could solve this problem without even having to print another currency. They actually can issue Federal Reserve notes, essentially. What they can do is own their own banks. There's one state in the union that does own its own bank. That's North Dakota. It's one of four states that are currently solvent. 46 of 50 states are insolvent, and they actually have to file for bankruptcy in the next couple of years, or file Chapter 9. That means they can't meet their budgets, and states are required to balance their budgets, unlike the federal government, which can spend and spend. But what a state can do is, like North Dakota has done, put all their revenues by law, this is what they do in North Dakota, into their own state-owned bank. And then they suddenly have new tools. A bank is authorized to create 10 times as much money in the form of credit, roughly, more than that, actually, than they have in reserve or as they have in deposit. So they can take all that money that they just put in the bank as their reserves, and now they have 10 times that sum in credit. So they can issue themselves loans, and because it's their bank, they can issue the loans on any terms they like. Could be 0.5% interest, and they could roll them over indefinitely, which is almost the same as printing money. So that's what I think they should do, get back the credit mechanism. The reason they did that in North Dakota is they did it in 1919 because it was a bunch of farmers who were Swedish farmers, and they were just tired of seeing their money go to Wall Street and go to the railroad men and the granaries. So they decided to take back their money system, and they did it by forming a bank. They had a party called the Nonpartisan League. It was actually beyond politics. It was just the farmers themselves they were all being put into foreclosure. Actually, there are two movies on it, and these foreclosures were clearly intended to rout out the farmers. I mean, they were unfairly done. They weren't accepting their grain when their grain was actually good, because they wanted the farmers to go bankrupt so they could take their farms.
So, is there a certain model that you think is better than the others, a certain region, a certain state? That you think is most that one right now?
That would be the leading model. I mean, nobody can say that they can't do it or that it's unconstitutional. They've done it for 90 years. And I think California should follow that model, but you could take it a lot farther. You could, in North Dakota, they make 1% loans to farmers. Of course, if it's a state-owned bank, then they're serving the state. They're supposed to serve the state. So all the profits go back into the bank. You don't have these multi-million dollar CEOs and all these fees and bonuses and so forth draining the profits out. And the state can control what they use the money for. So they can monetize their own projects, essentially. They write the project up on one side of the books, write the amount of money it's going to cost on the other side. It's double entry bookkeeping or accrual accounting. You pretend like the project's already done and count it as an asset, and then you can write up the money against that, draw on the account, pay the workers, pay the materials, build the thing, and then the profits, say it's alternative energy fees from that or housing, the rents from that, go back to pay off the loan. So in other words, you can generate your own credit, and that's what they should do. So I think for the big Wall Street banks, the stress tests were rather bogus, as everybody knows. I mean, they really weren't very stressful. They were supposedly looking at what would happen in the worst possible case, but they didn't. They were pretty much looking at the case we have right now. If you really want to stress these banks, I mean, the worst possible case could be much, much worse. Once the derivatives things start to collapse, that could be disastrous. And they weren't even looking at the derivatives, really. The Wall Street banks are loaded with derivatives, and they were counting loans as being more risky than derivatives. Well, loans, it's the small local banks that tend to have all the loans, and so it made the small banks look riskier, but actually the big banks are the riskiest because of those derivatives. So it's all very skewed, and it's all an effort to save a banking system that really cannot be saved. But I think instead of fighting them, what we should do is just let them collapse, put them into bankruptcy in the ordinary way. The fact that you put them through a reorganization doesn't mean that they've gone out of existence. They may be too big to let go out of existence, but they're not too big to put through a bankruptcy reorganization. Anyway, do that. And meanwhile, just set up a public banking system and that it'll become so obvious, if you have your own state-owned banks, it'll become so obvious that works better, that the old will just fall away by attrition. I mean, you can't really fight them because they've got all the power, but if you just build a better mousetrap, eventually everybody will come your way and say, that's what I was saying all along. If you see my drift.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was your analysis of the market today? I mean, a lot of people have different views on it. Some people think it's going to get better, everything's going to turn around, and there won't be a need for anything like this to have a local currency. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on what's going on?
I'd be very surprised if that happened. I think the reason the banks went up last week was the government essentially said they have to raise more capital, and the government said they're not expecting to have to come up with more TARP money, although the government will do it if they have to, but first, the banks are supposed to get out there and try to raise money. Well, how are they going to do that except to sell stock? And so you have to make their stock look good. But in fact, it would be stupid to buy bank stock under those conditions, because your stock's just about to get diluted because they're going to sell a bunch more stock, make your stock less valuable. What they should do is what they do in a bankruptcy reorganization, which is compel the creditors, this would be the bondholders, to change their bonds into stock. In other words, it's called a debt equity swap. So instead of having a dollar's worth of debt out there, the bank now has a dollar's worth of credit, or a dollar's worth of capital, rather. So that fixes the problem. Suddenly they're very well capitalized. It's just that the bondholders don't like it, and so they resist the whole thing, and they're pretty powerful.
I want to mention that
I heard
that USA Today is reporting on local currencies. And if you go ahead and Google local currency, 75 plus towns create their own money to keep cash flowing, you'll find this. It's been in the USA Today, Detroit News, Huffington Post. And then you can click on the images here. And I've never really seen, Alan, so many different depictions of the dollar or of currency in the United States from this era of time. So that's very interesting to see. We'll be back, and let's go into anything you want to bring up that you think is pertinent, Ellen, when we come back from this brief break. Phone numbers, call in 866-841-1065 or 512-904-8014. All right, this is Outside the Box on the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Check us out online. We'll be back in just a few.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
So just a brief news article here, and then we go back to Ellen. China cuts lending amid asset bubble fears. This is from the Financial Times. Chinese banking lending slowed dramatically in April because it appears that loan growth in the first quarter had been excessive and could pave the way for loans of deteriorating quality, so possibly creating a new round of asset bubbles. Ellen, you mentioned the Bank of International Settlements. What is that? Let's get into this particular group that I hear a lot about.
Well, the G20 nations met, or central banks met recently, and they decided to do something. I guess it's G20 countries. They decided to authorize the issuance of $250 billion worth of special drawing rights, which is a move toward a global currency. And what's alarming about all this is it's a global currency issued privately. It would not be anything that governments would have any control over. So it's ripe for conspiracy theorists. I mean, it's quite alarming that that might happen. And what's even more alarming, normally SDRs are issued by the IMF, but last fall when the G20 met, they were discussing who should have the power of being global policemen over this whole financial system, and one representative from the Bank of England said that he thought that the Bank for International Settlements was the ideal candidate because they exercised authority better, that the IMF was just kind of a diplomatic body. Well, the Bank for International Settlements is, they have a very shady reputation historically. They were called Hitler's Bank originally because they supposedly laundered gold sales for the Nazis, of gold that had been confiscated from the European countries. And we refused to join originally and tried to get them shut down for that reason. But, of course, now the Federal Reserve is part of it. There are 55 countries that make up the Bank for International Settlements, and they all have central banks, mostly privately owned central banks. So the BIS is basically the banker's bank. It's like the central bank of central banks. It's sort of a citadel unto itself. It's in Basel, Switzerland. They have their own police force, and they don't pay taxes, and they have governmental immunity.
Yeah, it's like, look at the eye of a reptilian, no pun intended, when you look at their logo over at www.bis.org. BIS.org, that's their official little site there.
And their building, it's nothing like the Federal Reserve that kind of looks stately and looks like it's trying to be a...
the UN. Looks like the UN there.
The BIS looks like a boot, but it's been called, it looks like a nuclear reactor. I mean, it's very ominous and threatening looking. And it has no sign. My daughter lives two blocks away, and there are no signs on it except this little tiny sign. You have to go very close to even tell what it is there.
Don't mind the people with the robes that come late at night. Don't mind them. I'm just kidding.
Right. Don't bother to look behind the curtain. Nothing going on here. Nothing to see here.
Well, hey, everybody just Google, do some research, Bank of International Settlements. I think it's something that perhaps I don't know enough about, and I think I know a lot about some of these subjects, so I need to do some research into that. Ex-Nazi bank, now the world's central bank. This is an article that also is on the web right now that documents some of what you said. So There's a lot of that. That's kind of a different topic. How many corporations were around in Nazi Germany? They're still here. It's really baffling. It really deserves its own book on that topic alone, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had two competing monetary systems for 300 years. One of them is government-issued money. It started in 1691 when it was the original American system. When the governor of Massachusetts needed money to fight a war and didn't have it, and he got the idea of printing paper receipts and paying his soldiers with them. And that worked really well, and all the colonies started doing it, and that's why we flourished for 100 years, and that was called the American system, 100 years before the Revolution. Meanwhile, in England, they started doing what was called the British system. This was banker-issued money, privately-issued money. And it's that system that now dominates the world globally. They've managed to take over most countries, and that is what is headed in Basel, Switzerland, the Bank for International Settlements. That's the head of the beast, the private global banking system. So they issued, before there was a Federal Reserve, they issued banknotes with their own names on them, supposedly backed by gold. So it didn't look like they were creating money. It looked like they were just giving you a little receipt for gold, and you could come and collect your gold whenever you wanted to. But the bankers had early on discovered that people only left their, or they only came for their gold 10% of the time because it was too heavy to carry around. It was dangerous. They preferred carrying these little paper receipts. So the banks issued, they discovered that they could issue up to 10 times as many paper receipts as they actually had gold. So that meant 9 out of 10 notes were counterfeit. But they got away with it, and it was actually became legitimized, and it was called fractional reserve lending. And that's the basis of our banking system today. And that is the system that we're trying to keep going, but we can't. It's the end of the line. It's a Ponzi scheme. And this is as far as it can go. We're up to $250 billion plus in derivatives in an attempt to keep the scheme going. That is a bubble that cannot be overcome by any larger bubble. There's no larger bubble that could be created that would save the day. The reason it's a Ponzi scheme is that banks issue, they lend the principal, they issue it, all their money is issued as loans. That's how the money gets out there. In other words, so they put out 10, take back 11, put out 11, take back 12 and a half or whatever. So they're always taking back more than they put out there. But since banks create all the money, that means that there's never enough money in the system to pay back their own loans. So they're always scrambling to find somebody else to take out yet another loan to cover the interest on the old loans that are the money supply. And so they pretty much locked up the whole world now in debt, and there's just nobody else. It's a Ponzi scheme that has run out of its food source. The parasite has run out of its food source. So we have to go to another system, and I would propose public banking, which is mathematically sound, and it's basically the American system. Go back
now,
to our...
At what point do you think our current model becomes so unsustainable that it implodes in on itself? Because this is nothing new. This has been happening for some time. We've just seen a major jump in the level of debt over our new administration. Not that the last one was any better. It was all leading up to this. It just got worse and worse and worse. So do you think that we have enough information to gauge, Ellen? Because, as you know, many people are calling for this summer as the red zone, if you will. What do you think?
Well, we're definitely at the end of the line. They can keep juggling a little longer, because what they're doing is they're paying off those derivative credit default swaps piecemeal. So we, the taxpayers, are pouring money down the black hole of trying to clean up the bank's books. But ultimately, it can't be done. There's $185 trillion in derivatives on the books of U.S. banks, and there is no way that we, the taxpayers, can fund all that. Of course, they're not all bad, but the point is that the potential liability is far more than we can afford to pay, and it's more than they're telling us about. Like these stress tests, they're saying, well, it's only a few, $100 billion is all it'll take, but it's going to be more than that, because they haven't even looked at the real stresses that could hit the system, and no doubt will. It's kind of like the Black Swan event when they set up all those derivatives. They said, well, housing never goes down. Well, that in itself was obvious. I mean, any ordinary housewife could tell you that what goes up must come down. But they honestly, like in 1998, AIG, when they got into credit default swaps, they said housing never goes down, and so they were just going to be collecting free money. It was a debt they couldn't lose.
Oh, wow, and looks like they're definitely making a killing. Well, we'll take the break, and then we'll come back and keep talking. And folks, and we thought we just had solar flares to worry about. No, it's economic implosions, too, and other things, and pandemics. Yes, maybe. Something like that. Promote the banker persona. Aren't they so cool? Is it Trump just a superstar? Aren't these bankers wonderful? It's okay when Obama does it, but when Bush does it, it's bad. It's bad that Bush does it, but when Obama does it, it's good. And it's fair. And to criticize Obama is to be a racist. All right, everybody, let's go back to Ellen. That's just basically my rant for the hour about what a crazy, crazy, crazy year I think it is. Ellen, I want to ask you, but I want you to bring up anything you want, but I want to ask you, how do you think we can implement local currency systems, barter systems? I get people asking me that question specifically for how it can be done in Portland.
Well, local currencies are definitely good, particularly if things collapse, that there's always been a surge in local currencies when there are depressions. In the 1930s, the U.S. had a lot of local currencies, and in Germany they've had one that's been going for a long time that works really well, and it serves as a secondary currency so that it relieves the pressure on the national currency, so when they contract the national currency, the local currency can fill in the gaps. So that's all good. But for me, it's not really the ideal solution, just because you have the same problem that you have with all the currencies around the world competing with each other. Well, your own local currency may not be good for goods that you need, and so then you've got to figure out, you know, it's not a great long-term solution, because your currency just doesn't go very far. It's only good for what's available in the community, and your community may not be that big. I'm in a local currency group, and the problem is nobody ever particularly asks for my services. And I mean, maybe there might be better ways to advertise or whatever, I don't know. But and I don't, because I'm a lawyer, you know, I'm not really inclined to trade a dollar or an hour's worth of legal work for an hour's worth of washing my car or something, because it's a lot more work, it's hard on my brain. So there are a lot of snags in that whole system, but it's certainly good to have those in place for when things fall apart, or if they fall apart. In Argentina, when the currency collapsed totally, like it totally collapsed, the national currency, and then local currencies became big, and they were very effective, where people could trade products or services. The main problem with that, the reason that currency didn't survive, was that because it wasn't officially printed, it was easily counterfeited, and so people took advantage of the system and started printing money. I mean, that's one thing to be said for the national currency. They have all those ways of putting little threads or whatever it is they do so that it's very hard to counterfeit.
Well, I think people got to find a way to come together and in some way work together, barter items. You know, in a full-on currency collapse. So I guess one of the best things we can do is to move their people of like minds, where there won't be as much struggle or panic. It's going to be, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that in the future and what people ought to do, Ellen, but it's going to be, obviously, people are going to be reacting differently in different environments, where there are different resource challenges, different water qualities, different levels of availability of food, different levels of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the ultimate solution is local banks, form your own bank. You've probably heard that joke about the best way to rob a bank is to own one, but it's also the best way to set up your own credit system is to own a bank. Just jump through the hoops and have, when you first hear that banks create the money they lend on their books, the banks create 10 times as much money as they have, and you think, oh, that's shocking, that's fraudulent. And then you think more about it, and you think, why don't we do that? We could do the very same thing. The reason the banking system is collapsing is because their books are all clogged up with these toxic assets. Well, we could start fresh with public banks or just any big entity, like a university could do it, take all their assets and put them in the form of a bank. And then they could make loans to themselves, and they could lend 10 times as much money as they have. They can set their own interest rates and roll the loans over as long as they need to. So we can beat them at their own game, in other words, by setting up public institutions that do the same thing they do, following their own rules. But we'll actually turn them to community use.
Find a way to smash up that eye at the top of the pyramid, turn it upside down, I don't know. It seems to be the cycle of era that we're in with revolution and talks of change, real change, not White House packaging change, all around the planet. So it seems like, you know, what happens here is clearly happening in Europe. So this is not just about America as well, because they're also under the grip of the EU. And it seems to be, any thoughts on the global nature of this?
Yes, well, there's definite signs that all this was orchestrated, and that the idea is to drive us into a global currency. And for decades, the Bilderbergers have talked about a global currency, and I remember there was talk in the 60s, I think, somebody at one of those Bilderberg meetings said, or talked about the world company. The idea was to have everything owned privately by this private money group. And that's obviously what they've aimed to do with all these mergers and acquisitions. But through all that, all of that is merely pulling profits off the top. It's not actually contributing to productivity. So what we need to do is, the way to fight all that is to set up our own public system that actually does create productivity. In other words, when we create credit, credit should be created in conjunction with something. In other words, it's something you're going to produce. If you create money on your books in order to produce something for the community, like a dam, let's say. So you write the dam up on one side of your books, and what's the cost on the other side? You draw from that account, pay workers and materials, and then build the dam, and then the profits from the dam go back to the electricity it generates, the profits go back to pay off the loan. Anyway, all that, if you do the system in that way, with credit as a public utility, essentially, it all works out mathematically, and you don't have the Ponzi scheme parasitic nature of what we have right now. The system can be fixed. We just need to shine another light on it. We need a Copernican revolution in our conception of what money is, money and credit.
Mm-hmm. And for those that are just joining us, we're talking with Ellen Brown, and her book is Web of Debt. You can check out her website, webofdebt.com. There's just so much going on, Ellen. What do you think the people also need to hear about right now, either about the book? I see there's, you know, you got about, how many chapters here? About 50-some chapters or near that, just about 46, 40, 48. What do you think people really need to hear about this in addition to what we already talked about?
Well, what you need to know is, and what is the hardest thing to get across, is that banks do not lend their own money. They do not lend their depositors money. They create the money they lend on their books. And since that is true, the solution to this whole crisis is to set up our own banks, our public banks. Either they could be federally owned, they could be state owned, they could even be like university owned, or any large entity could do it. Set up public banks that also create credit on their books. The whole function of a bank really is as a guarantor. the seller wants his money now, the buyer doesn't have it. The seller says, the buyer says, let me pay you over time and I'll pay you extra in the form of interest. But if you trust me to do it, but the seller doesn't know the buyer and he doesn't trust him, but they do trust this third entity, this bank in town. So the bank says, okay, I'll pretend to have the money, but they don't really have it. They pretend to have it.
All right, Ellen, let's continue on the other side. This will be a shorter break, and we'll continue. I want to get also your take on some of the martial law preparations, because I know you seem to be aware of it, and you actually kind of mentioned a little bit in your book some of the preparations with troops. So we'll be back in just a few. 866-841-1065.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
So we're back, and we're talking with Ellen in California from the book Web of Death. We're going to have her for a couple more minutes in the next segment and conclude here. Okay, so, Ellen, we're looking at a couple things here. A lot of drills. People are concerned about a big FEMA drill coming up in June and July involving multiple states and multiple countries. And I've seen reports about more foreign troops working with the military. There's something happening right now in Florida, in my neck of the woods in the Northwest. The Singaporean Air Force is being given the base in the state of Idaho. So all these things are on my website for those listening to go and get those links. And I put a lot of work to bring those links together. So Alan, are you should we be concerned about this, or do you think it's just some of the more old, same old, same old?
Well, what they must be anticipating is civil unrest when things falling apart when our money system collapses. They're certainly anticipating a collapse. There's the IMF riot is factored in whenever they take away the people's when they impose conditionalities on third world countries in return for renewing their debts or giving them better favorable debt terms. So they make the workers give up their benefits and they cut back on bus services and all that. And predictably there's a riot, and they factored that in, and they actually want the riot because it gives them an excuse to go in and get more totalitarian type power. So I suspect that's what this is
all
about.
Did you see or hear what happened at the G20? With some of the police violence?
No.
There was one particular, I haven't mentioned this yet, this just came out yesterday or the day before, so it's a new news report, but it has come out, there were some agent provocateurs that were used at this last G20 protest. It's a London Telegraph article, and they identified the people that were attacking police to be policemen in plain clothes, acting like they're protesters. And I felt very strange about it when I saw it, where the guy came out with blood dripping down his head and was screaming at the police, and he was spitting and he was kicking, and they weren't doing anything. At that point, one point, they grabbed him. This is on YouTube. Type an Asian provocateur at G20. And ironically, Ellen, this was on Fox and a couple other network news channels, big ones, at the same time, where they were all like, ooh, look at that protester. Look at him. And based on that, I got really weird feelings, and I was watching it, and they never hit him. He fell to the ground, and they let him slide back to the crowd for him to continue his yelling and his throwing with sticks and things of that nature. And then you see in other videos, they're attacking women and young protesters that are doing nothing. So anyway, it did come out that we have more documentation to show to people that it's in the mainstream, that's an open admission.
Well, that's it. I think they're trying to. They want us to take to the streets because that gives them an excuse to round people up and to exercise martial law, because they have to have peace and they have to have security. Everybody wants security first and foremost. Homeland security. Ominous shades of Nazi Germany.
And I think they called that the fatherland security. Well, let's come back and let's conclude with you, Ellen. Last thought. I mean, that's right. Just like Nazi Germany. It's just...
Here comes Angel.
making down the United States. As we also see the emergence of private mercenary groups, gangs really, that will work directly for the banks. So, Alan, break down the Bank of International Settlements, the brief history of it, how it ties to Hitler, whatever you want to mention in terms of the key part of, I guess, what all this is about. I guess you only have about 8 minutes. It's not much time, but...
Okay. The Bank for International Settlements imposed two rules, Basel I and Basel II. Basel I required banks to keep a certain amount of capital, and it was imposed in the 1990s. When Japan had the strongest banks in the world, but they had less capital than other banks. So Basel I, the rule was imposed that they had to have 8% capital. So this is different from reserves. Reserves are the deposits of your depositors, but capital is actually the money that you have, like what your shareholders put up or what you have in profits. So you would have to have $8 of capital for every $100 of loans. Well, the Japanese banks didn't have it, and that rule was actually literally responsible for bankrupting what were then the strongest banks in the world, the Japanese banks. And everybody looked back later and said, oh, well, they went too far, and it was a mistake. You know, it was a miscalculation. But who knows? It could well be that they intended to bring down those Japanese banks because they were the biggest threat to everybody else. So... In 2007, in the summer of 2007, the two Bear Stearns hedge funds went bankrupt. But nevertheless, by October of 2007, our stock market, or the Dow, hit its all-time high. It passed 14,000. And then in November, there's a second rule called Basel II that was imposed on U.S. banks. It's the mark-to-market rule, and all of a sudden, there was a credit freeze. All of a sudden, the banks couldn't lend anymore. And this was because there was a total change in accounting rules. Before, they had enough assets on their books to make loans. And then all of a sudden, it was like, oh, new rules. Now you have to value your assets according to what they would fetch on the market today, not according to the old rules. And nobody wanted a lot of the assets on the bank books of the banks since the Bear Stearns hedge funds had collapsed and had to put up their collateralized debt obligations for sale, and it was obvious nobody wanted them because they were now known to be toxic assets. So anyway, it was this change in accounting rules that actually brought down the system. It wasn't directly the Bank for International Settlements came out with their rule in 2004, and it was our accounting board that imposed it here in the fall of 2007. But it was their rule, and that just shows how they can control countries and economies just by a change in accounting rules. And they've just said recently that the G20 agreed to this whole new set of accounting that's going to cover everybody globally. And if you don't comply with that, you'll be eliminated from the global trade, et cetera. So they've got control, and it's very hard. I tried to track down what it was we just agreed to, and you can't find it. I mean, they say that the 12 key is something that they agreed to at some other point in 2000, but where these 12 key things are, they're not on the Internet that I can find. So we've agreed to we've agreed to something that it's not clear what we've agreed to, and later they'll come back. It's just like when we agreed to the Federal Reserve Act, nobody understood what it was, and it was passed in the middle of the night, you know, right before Christmas. And even the opponents who read the thing didn't know what they had just agreed to. And even now, if you read the thing, it's not clear that document or that act gives a private central bank the power to create our money for us. So that's what's happening, is that rules are being imposed and agreed to under these stressful conditions as if we all have to do it to save our credit system, which is not true. And later they're going to pull out the rules and say, well, see, you signed, and this is what you agreed to, and then we'll have to all march in lockstep. But we are obviously the last big domino to go, and you can make a case that we've now been targeted and we're going down with everybody else because that was the plan and this was the time. But there's a way out. The way out is to set up our own. We don't need their banks. We don't need their credit system. We can set up our own credit system, a public credit system. So that's my proposed solution.
Well, thanks for coming on. And any other websites other than webofdebt.com or any other ways people to contact you or find out about the books?
I have another website, ellenbrown.com, and it lists all my books. I have 11 books. And webofdebt.com, obviously, is about Web of Debt, or you can get it on Amazon.
And so you probably talk about some of the naturopathic solutions to boost your immune system as well, maybe, or some of the stuff that most people don't know about the medical establishment.
Oh, yeah. I co-authored several books, so one called Nature's Pharmacy, which runs through 160 diseases. And what the best alternative, why you don't want to take the conventional remedy, basically, and what the best natural remedy is. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming on. Perhaps, if you like, we can have you on in a couple months for the other topic about alternative cancer treatments, about herbs, about beating the flu without the vaccine, about why not to take the vaccine. If you like, maybe we can do something on that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, I think that we have the medical issue in front of us right now, as in today, about the single payer. Well, if we the people are going to undertake in any way to pay for the health care of the whole country, we have to change the standards for what we're paying for. What we're paying for right now are treatments that are making us sicker, and they're very, very expensive. They're much cheaper, healthier ways to have universal health.
Great. I'm going to check that out. Thank you, Ellen, for coming on. Ellen Brown, webofdebt.com and ellenbrown.com. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Ellen. All right. We're going to try to get some more guests on here, ladies and gentlemen, a lot of different perspectives. If you'd like to help out and get some guests, I'm getting psyched up about having a lot more guests on. At least a couple a week. So if you'd like to help out, you know my email, alex_answer@hotmail.com. I'm going to have to work on a list myself. We've got to utilize the resources that we have at our fingertips. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll cover the other news and developments that are breaking this week. Stay with me. AlexAnsery.com is the website to visit. Visit AlexAnsery.com now. AlexHansery.com, your source for news you can trust.